Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents World Prehistory, The Basics, by Brian M. Fagan and Nadia Durrani. Narrated by Lee Gatel. Publisher's Note. This audiobook will refer to visual elements included in the print and ebook editions of the book. Preface. This book is a narrative account of the human past, from our origins to the pre-industrial civilizations. It's not a stirring adventure story of golden pharaohs, pyramids, and lost continents. That's the archaeology of fiction and romance. The story we tell here is written as an overarching narrative without any specialized emphases. We try and answer a basic question. What does today's archaeology tell us about what actually happened over the long time span of the human experience? It's a history of humankind written not from written records, although we make limited use of them, but from the fascinating archive compiled by archaeologists. We are, after all, the only people who study the entire span of human history from the beginning to today. This is a global book, reflecting our rapidly changing perspectives on human diversity, how we are different and similar. This is a volume for beginners who know little or nothing of archaeology. We use as little technical jargon as possible. Nor do we dwell on the numerous controversies that surround human prehistory. We mentioned some of them, like, for example, those over the first settlement of the Americas, but only in passing. Our intent here is to tell you what happened more than the intricacies of why. Welcome to the absorbing world of archaeology and archaeologists. Brian Fagan and Nadia Durrani. Author's Note. We use the following conventions in this book. Dates. We express dates before 12,000 years ago in years before present. MA, million years ago. BCE, CE. We use BCE, before the Common Era, rather than BC, AD in this book. Present, for the purposes of this book, is 1950 CE. The common usage. All radiocarbon dates are statistical approximations. Unless stated to the contrary, they have been calibrated to actual time. Measurements. All measurements are given in metric units, as these are now the common scientific convention. Chapter 1. Beginnings. Circa 6 to 2 MA. About 3.7 million years ago, a volcano named Sadaman in Tanzania, East Africa, erupted with a cloud of fine ash. The cascading volcanic dust fell in a thin layer on the surrounding landscape at Laetoli. Then light rain fell, creating a soft, cement-like pathway in a seasonal river that led to nearby waterholes. Dozens of now extinct animals walked along the riverbed soon afterward: elephants, saber-toothed tigers, and antelope. Another subsequent eruption sealed the hardened surface with its footprints, which included those of two human ancestors. Trailing behind them, often stepping directly into the adult footprints, are those of a child. We have but an indirect sketch of the walkers. The imprints came from individuals between 1.4 and 1.49 meters tall. They walked with a rolling, slow-moving gait, their hips swiveling with each step, very different from the freestanding gait of modern humans. Their footprints display well-developed arches, with heel and toe prints that could only have been made by someone walking on 2 feet, very different from those of upright chimpanzees. The Laetoli footprints provide a glimpse of early hominins, and their discovery in the 1970s led to the bombshell realization that bipedalism, walking on 2 feet, preceded growth in brain size and not the other way around. Researchers realized that upright walking meant our hands were now free. This meant we could make things, and creativity is a key attribute of our human family. Hominidae and Hominini. First, some genealogy. We humans are members of the order Primates, which includes two suborders, one of which includes the Anthropoids, which incorporates apes, people, and monkeys. Further up the genealogical pyramid, we belong to the superfamily Hominoidea, which also includes gibbons, gorillas, chimpanzees, and the bonobo. Within the hominoid superfamily, there's a division between hominidae, which includes African and Asian apes, as well as us. We belong to the hominini, or hominin tribe, which includes modern humans, earlier human subspecies, and their direct ancestors. To date, researchers have identified over 20 hominin species, but only some of them are our ancestors, many becoming extinct without giving rise to new species. At any given time over much of the past 6 million years, several hominin species coexisted. A species is typically defined as a group of organisms that can provide fertile offspring. It was only after around 30,000 years ago that the other human species became extinct and only we, Homo sapiens, remained. But, given the scanty archaeological record for the early period, how do we know when hominins separated from non-human primates? In the beginning. By 14 MA, Africa's climate was much drier than in earlier times. Hard fruit and grass-eating hominoids flourished throughout East Africa between 8 and 5 MA. They spent much time on the ground but walked on 4 feet. Unfortunately, we know almost nothing about these hominoids. They lived at a time of major environmental changes, including cooler temperatures and more open, as opposed to wooded, terrain. Today's humans are the descendants of these generalized common hominoid ancestors. As forests retreated and tropical Africa's climate became drier, they adapted to much more open savanna environments. This was when early hominins became bipedal, perhaps because they spent more time feeding off foods on the ground. Bipedalism meant that walking assumed great importance for foraging over wider areas. In adapting to drier environments, early hominin populations with their bipedalism could cover longer distances and had improved endurance. Apes, which were adapted to forested environments, stayed in the trees. In contrast, bipedal hominins, who potentially evolved around 6 MA, expanded the range of territory where they obtained food. They broadened their diets, now including more meat. The long-term solutions to living in the savanna meant exploiting patchy and widely distributed foods, while depending on reliable, and often hard to find, water supplies. The hominins were constantly on the move, with meat now playing a more important role during seasons when plant foods were scarce. Most experts believe that East Africa was the main center of early human evolution. It is here that the greatest number of early hominins have come to light. But future fossil discoveries may complicate this scenario. The now desert environments of Ethiopia and northern Kenya were open savanna grassland and woodland that teemed with herds of antelope and other mammals. These were prey for lions, leopards, and other predators, and also for our early hominin ancestors. We know almost nothing of these hominins except the little-known, probably bipedal, Aronin tugenensis, who lived about 6.5 to 5.6 MA. There is also Sahelanthropus chadensis, of Central African origin. The latter may date to 7 to 6 MA, which would place it at around the time of the likely divergence of the hominin lineage with that of the chimpanzee. The date of this split depends less on the Spartan fossil evidence and more on genetic analysis of modern humans and modern chimps. By recording the amount by which the genes of the two species have diverged, geneticists theorize the time of our split. This method of timing, known as the molecular clock, is based on a number of assumptions, which are constantly refined. And while there is disagreement over the precise date of our split, most geneticists currently put it somewhere between 8 and 6 MA. As to the hominins that lived at the dawn of our story, certainly the two species referred to a moment ago were potentially bipedal, a defining characteristic of the hominin, yet they were also tree climbers. Ardipithecus ramidus, 4.5 MA. As the centuries turned into millennia, other hominin species undoubtedly came and went, such as Ardipithecus kadaba of Ethiopia, 5.8 to 5.2 MA. But around 4.5 MA, a new player appeared on the evolutionary stage with the appearance of Ardipithecus ramidus, a small creature with a brain that was about 20% the size of that of a modern human, Ardipithecus is the best known of all the early hominins and comes from excavations at Eremus and Goma in Ethiopia. It had a skull closer to that of apes and a prognathous, jutting out, face. These hominins were bipedal, but apparently lived in more wooded terrain than many of their successors. Various australopithecines followed, such as Australopithecus anamensis, 4.2 to 3.9 ma, who, like Ardi, could probably walk upright and climb trees, possessing, once again, a combination of characteristics found both in modern apes and present-day humans. Ardipithecus ramidus was not the only hominin in East Africa at the time. Most likely, they were the base grade from which later hominins evolved. But the exact relationship between Ardipithecus and later human ancestors is still a mystery. Australopithecus afarensis, the southern ape from afar, circa 3.9 to 2.9 ma. After hundreds of thousands of years, and we're talking about long timescales here, one of the best-known australopithecines emerged, Australopithecus afarensis. It may be the ancestor of the genus Homo, to which modern humans, us, belong. Australopithecus afarensis has already appeared in this story, thanks to its footprints at Laetoli in Tanzania. These hominins are best known from the Hadar region of Ethiopia, famous for Maurice Taib and Donald Johnson's discovery of a 3.18 million-year-old incomplete skeleton that they named Lucy. They were playing the Beatles' song Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds when they celebrated their discovery. She was only 1.0 to 1.2 meters tall and between 19 and 21 years old. Subsequent finds have filled in the picture. There was a marked difference between males and much smaller females, but all were powerful, heavily muscled, and fully bipedal. A 3.2 ma foot found near Lucy's find spot had arches, showing that Ardipithecus was a nimble walker. But despite this walking ability, their robust, curved arms and fingers are those of habitual tree climbers. Their brain capacity was just larger than the maximum brain size of modern chimpanzees. At first, Australopithecus afarensis appeared to be confined to East Africa, but they probably flourished over a much wider area, into southern Africa. Whether or not these discoveries represent more than one species of australopithecine remains unknown, but Australopithecus afarensis may have been the most widespread. Around 3 ma, the record includes a species identified by the famed anatomist Raymond Dart in the 1920s. He recognized a small, graceful australopithecine from Tong in South Africa, which he named Australopithecus africanus, 3.3 to 2.1 ma. This was a nimble hominin who could walk upright, despite its small brain size. Samples range from 428 to 625 cubic centimeters. Dart's close ally, Robert Broom, then discovered another species, Australopithecus robustus, since renamed Paranthropus robustus, a heavy-set hominin that flourished between about 2 and 1 ma. They had similar-sized brains, 530 cubic centimeters, and massive back teeth, which were ideal for chewing coarse, fibrous plant foods. Due to these two species, Raymond Dart emphasized a robust and gracile subdivision among the early humans, which is still convenient. But inevitably, later discoveries have revealed a greater diversity of australopithecines and paranthropines, especially between 3.3 and 2 ma. This long period of time witnessed major changes in the skull and face, and perhaps more modern behavioral changes too, as our ancestors began routinely walking upright. This meant their hands were now freed up, which in turn allowed them to make things, arguably with more ease than a four-footed creature. Indeed, a site in Kenya has yielded the oldest known human-made stone tools in the world, at 3.3 ma, which were clearly the work of one of these early hominin forms. Enter Homo habilis, circa 2.5 ma. Sometime around 2.5 ma. We find evidence for Homo habilis, the first member of the genus Homo, to which we modern humans belong. They had larger brains, smaller jaws and teeth, also longer legs, shorter arms, and nimble hands. Their larger, opposable thumbs like ours allowed them to pinch and manipulate objects in different directions. Body size tended to increase. The size differences between males and females, sexual dimorphism, became less marked. These changes roughly coincided with the first appearance of stone tools. Lewis and Mary Leakey were the first to identify this earliest Homo at Olduvai Gorge, now often called Odupai, in Tanzania. They named their find Homo habilis, handy person, assuming that this was the first tool-making human. Subsequently, fossil remains of Homo habilis have come from Kenya, Ethiopia, and South Africa, dating to between 2.4 and 1.6 MA. The term Homo habilis almost certainly encompasses several early human species, sometimes referred to generically as early Homo. If you had encountered Homo habilis about 2 million years ago, you would have seen little to distinguish the new hominin from the Australopithecus. Both were of similar height and weight, about 1.3 meters tall and weighing about 40 kilograms. They were both bipedal, but habilis looked less ape-like around the face and skull. The head was higher and rounder, the brain capacity as high as 700 cubic centimeters, the face less protruding, and the jaw smaller. Adult chimpanzees have brain capacities around 384 cubic centimeters. Microscopic studies of their teeth show that both Australopithecus and Homo habilis were predominantly fruit eaters. Homo habilis skeletons are a mosaic of primitive and more advanced features. Their owners spent a lot of time walking upright, but they were completely at ease in trees. We know this from a Homo habilis skeleton at Olduvai, where, like much earlier Lucy, the upper limb bones are up to 95% of the length of the thigh. Chimpanzees have almost equal dimensions for upper arm and leg bones, whereas modern human upper arms are only 70% of the length of their upper leg bones. Almost certainly, all forms of Homo habilis were expert tree climbers. They may have been more ape-like in their behavior than one might be tempted to believe. Indeed, it was their association with the first stone tools, a profound invention among the ancestors, that led evolutionists to place this species in our genus. But with the recent discovery of an even older 3.3 MA stone tools in Kenya, the link between Homo and the ability to make stone tools has been broken. As a result, the status of Homo habilis as a member of the genus Homo is being questioned by some. Adaptive radiation. As you can see, the picture is complex. Many of our basic assumptions have been thoroughly smashed by new discoveries. Until surprisingly recently, for instance, everyone assumed that human evolution was ladder-like, with an ape-like ancestor at the base and modern humans at the top, with tool-making as the most defining human characteristic. We now know that identifying the earliest human, let alone some unbroken ancestry over time, is virtually impossible. There were many more hominin species thriving at the time, and the links between individual species are typically far from clear. Instead, paleoanthropologists Bernard Wood and Mark Collard used an intricate statistical analysis using body size, shape, locomotion, and other features to divide humans into two broad groups. These adapted to the environment in different ways. Australopithecines and Homo habilis, circa 4.2 to 1.6 MA. This group relied on both bipedal walking on the ground and expert climbing. Their body mass was low, their shape better adapted to relatively wooded environments. Their teeth and jaws, closer to those of apes, enabled chewing and biting a varied and mechanically demanding diet. Later humans, including Homo erectus and other species, 1.9 MA to present, offered a significant contrast. Their body masses were larger, and their physique was adaptive to more open terrain. They spent their lives on 2 feet and had but limited tree-climbing abilities. Their teeth and jaws had the same mechanical properties as modern humans. Hominin evolution resulted from a series of adaptive radiations that unfolded over about 6 million years. The first radiation was that of bipedal apes in the drier parts of Africa. Then, subsequent radiations gave rise to various hominins, each with their own adaptive solutions. Later humans radiated not so much anatomically as ecologically, spreading from Africa and creating distinct geographic populations. In doing this, we were no different from other animals, which began as a slim stem and radiated into distinct branches. The wood-collared classification creates a significant chasm between the hominins of earlier than about 1.9 MA and those who evolved after that date. What caused this major adaptive shift in human evolution is unknown. Did it correspond with major climatic and environmental swings, or was it the result of changes in hominin culture? These are fundamental questions for future generations of research. Scavenging and opportunism. Studying the earliest humans and how they lived requires slow-moving, fine-grained research both in the field and in the laboratory. Poor preservation conditions make it hard to reconstruct the lifeways of more than 2 million years ago. Much of the story comes from clusters of stone tools and surviving food remains, especially broken animal bones. A newly promising approach calls on stable carbon isotopes in bones and teeth, which gives an idea of the relative importance of tropical grasses as opposed to shrub and tree foods in hominin diets. For hundreds of thousands of years, hunters and foragers used central places where they returned to sleep, make tools, cook food, and engage in social activities. But did the earliest humans use such locations? Scatters of animal bone fragments, also stone tools and waste flakes, have been excavated at Olduvai Gorge, also near the eastern shores of Lake Turkana in northern Kenya. One dry streambed at Kubifora near the lake yielded the bones of a hippopotamus, which a group of hominins came across about 1.8 MA. They gathered around the dead animal and removed meat and bones from it with stone flakes. The butchers imported stone from 14 kilometers away to strike off flakes to dismember the carcass. We don't know whether they simply scavenged meat from the dead beast or whether they hunted it themselves. Another Kubifora site named FXJJ50 lies in an ancient watercourse where one could take shelter from the blazing sun. Over 2,000 bones from at least 20 animals, mainly antelope, lay among choppers, sharp-edged flakes, and battered cobbles. The visitors smashed bones and cut off flesh, for the cutting marks are clearly visible. But the game may have been killed by predators, who chewed off the articular ends of the bones. Perhaps the lions and other beasts that killed the animals fled when the hominins arrived. At Olduvai Gorge, Mary Leakey recorded what she called living floors, one of which yielded more than 4,000 tools and broken bones over an area 4.5 meters across. An early location in the gorge known as Iwasodolpa has yielded stone tools some 2 million years old. But did the hominins camp there? More recent research has shown that some of the weathered bones had lain on the surface for perhaps as long as 10 years. Olduvai was, and still is, a predator-rich environment, where it would have been dangerous for hominins to remain at one location for any period of time. Many of the Olduvai bones bear traces of predator teeth as well as human activity, as if the hominins moved in and seized meat from predator kills when the opportunity arose. We know that hominins visited the same places occasionally over periods as long as 200,000 years, using different habitats and adapting to numerous environmental changes without changing their technology. This is one of the earliest examples of people adapting their behavior to major ecological transformations. Yet they continued to use the same simple stone tools without significant modification for 200 millennia. It was changing human behavior, not technology, that allowed Homo habilis to exploit a wide range of habitats effortlessly. Opportunism has always been an important human quality and may well have come into play when our forebears spent more time in open landscapes. There, they competed successfully with other carnivores by obtaining and eating meat. The dangers of competing with other predators were outweighed by the advantages, especially more readily available, easily carried food supplies. More often than we realize, too, hominins may have been prey rather than predators. Being hunted brought evolutionary pressures to bear on our ancestors. With time, our otherwise defenseless, naked ape, ground-living ancestors learned how to use their newly freed-up hands to make things to aid their survival. These things included stone tools and presumably other long-perished objects. With such creativity, so brain size began to grow, which may have been further enhanced by a new diet that began to include calorie-rich animal flesh. Scavenging came first, yet it was never easy for relatively slow-moving animals like hominins. Success depended on close observation, of vultures gathering above fresh predator kills, of telltale antelope fur tufts at the foot of trees where leopards stashed their kills. The open savanna was an ideal and vacant niche for humans armed with simple weapons and tools. These made possible new ways of getting food and processing it, not only meat, but also plant foods of many kinds. The minute wear patterns of hominin teeth tell us both that Australopithecus and Homo habilis thrived on a diet very similar to that of chimpanzees. Homo habilis and some of the Australopithecines certainly engaged in scavenging. This must have involved some cooperation and advanced planning, perhaps division of labor between young and old, or men and women. Some groups carried tool-making stone over 10 kilometers from its source, probably far from the carcasses they sought. Scavenging may have begun as a way of supplementing plant foods in more open landscapes and a drier world. There's one certainty. How Homo habilis behaved was completely different from pre-hominin apes, chimpanzees, or, for that matter, from modern hunter-gatherers. The earliest technology, 3.3 to 1.5 MA. We humans manufacture tools habitually and with far more complexity than other animals like chimpanzees. One reason is that our big brains allow us to plan our actions far further in advance. The sequence of moving flakes from a stone lump to produce a finished tool required selecting the correct rock. Then the toolmaker had to visualize the three-dimensional steps needed to flake it and make a tool. Finally, and most important of all, one had to be capable of passing on this knowledge to others, presumably by example. The earliest known stone tools date to 3.3 MA, known from the Lomekwe III site in West Turkana, northern Kenya. But the earliest well-studied technology, known as the Olduvai industry, after Olduvai Gorge, dates to between 2.67 and 1.5 MA. Most Olduvai tools were choppers and flakes, the latter used to cut meat and perhaps wood. Homo habilis developed a simple, highly effective technology that became more complex over time. Eventually, the toolmakers flaked the choppers on both sides to make simple bifacial tools. The choppers and flakes were simple, but those who made them had a skilled appreciation of basic stone flaking techniques. Thanks to years of research with Olduvai toolmaking, we know that Homo habilis could readily produce dozens of sharp-edged flakes. These studies included examining traces of edge wear, also controlled experiments such as skinning and butchering animals with replica flakes. But the hominins did not make the kinds of standardized tools made by later humans. Their tools were mainly used to process animal carcasses, skinning, cutting joints and meat, and breaking open bones for marrow. The earliest tool-making expertise was opportunistic and changed gradually as humans became more dependent on technology over the millennia. How, then, did Homo habilis interact with the natural world? There was a dramatic rise in meat consumption about 2 MA, but, in practice, all species of Homo habilis were behaviorally flexible, non-specialized foragers. Theirs was a diverse lifeway marked by shifts between simple hunting and scavenging, between food sharing and feeding on the move. We know that they carried cores and flakes over considerable distances, a sign that they also moved meat and other foods to different, ever-changing locations. This hints at a more sophisticated interaction with the environment than chimpanzees, who carry tools, mainly chewed sticks for extracting bugs from trees and anthills, only to fix locations. The anthropologist Robin Dunbar has estimated that Australopithecines lived in groups of about 67 individuals. He hypothesizes that Homo habilis flourished in larger groups of about 81 individuals. Group living was essential for ground-dwelling hominins living in environments like the African savanna, which teemed with predators. They had only the simplest of weapons for protection and no fire. With time, the increasingly large brain of the Homo genus allowed for greater social intelligence for coping with the complexities of
sample complete. Ready to continue?